We get a Photoshop. We just Photoshop.
Okay, everybody, smile.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
All right, Happy New Year, everybody. Before we gavel in, we have a very special presentation, a source of great pride for our city and state. I'm pleased to, and would invite our distinguished guests for it, I'm pleased to recognize the president of the University of Oregon, not only for its academic excellence and accomplishments across the state, including their Portland campus, but also their unprecedented success of their football team. The partnership between the University of Oregon and Portland has a long history dating back to the opening of the U of O Law School in 1884. Its new green building, located on the White Stag Block, has been a catalyst for redevelopment of not only the area around it, but also the continuing academic success and training success of Portlanders. The university's Sustainable Cities Initiative has also helped to drive innovation and sustainability here locally. So I'm very pleased to read the following proclamation, and then we would very much like to hear from you. And I must say, I worked as a part-time concessionaire at Autzen Stadium back in the 70s and 80s, and the team wasn't so good, but the weather was just as bad, so it made for fun times. Whereas in 1876, the University of Oregon has provided Oregonians with access to an education of the highest distinction. And whereas the U of O has offered programs in Portland for more than 100 years and today offers professional level courses in journalism, law, architecture, digital arts, product design, and business in a vibrant facility in Old Town Chinatown. Whereas the U of O has more than 160,000 alumni around the world, with some 41% living in the Portland metropolitan area. And whereas in the past year, the U of O had a National Medal of Science winner, two Guggenheim Fellows, two invited visits to the White House, a TED Fellow, and two Marshall Scholars. And whereas the U of O has produced the highest number of general officers of all non-military ROTC schools nationwide and has 46 flag officers among its graduates. And whereas the U of O has a history of student activism and service and is consistently at or near the top of the list for Peace Corps recruits per capita, and whereas the U of O ranks first among 230 universities as the most gay-friendly college in the United States by Campus Pride, and whereas the U of O's four current academic All-Americans, as well as its first unanimous football All-American, symbolize the university's commitment to academic and athletic excellence, and whereas the U of O team will proudly represent the state of Oregon at the 2011 BCS National Champions, now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim today to be University of Oregon Champions Day. Congratulations.
Good day.
Well, thank you, Mayor Adams, and commissioners, and people of the City of Portland for this remarkable gesture of honor and affection. This is unprecedented for all of us. We are all appropriately excited. This is the first time that any university in Oregon has been at the national championship. But on reflection, I'm advising everybody to get used to it. This is not just a great moment for the football team and for the athletics program, but it really is focusing attention on the state of Oregon and what a remarkable place this is. And we are absolutely thrilled to be the vectors for that focus. We are the University of Oregon. We represent the entire state. And this is an honor, opportunity to celebrate everything that's Oregon. As the mayor said, it goes back 126, 127 years now, the relationship between the University of Oregon and this remarkable city. And we continue to offer programs that are unique, not just in the state and the region, but probably in the world in terms of our design programs, our urban architecture programs, and others. And the demand for this that I have seen since coming here tells me that we've got a lot more that we need to be doing here and that we are going to be doing to meet the demands of the people of this terrific city. And thank you to all of you who helped facilitate our presence in the White Stag Block. I know that you, as commissioners, have seen this facility. Any of you who have not visited, it is spectacular. It's wonderful. We feel very, very lucky to be there and to be part of the revitalization of a segment of the city that is rich with history and wonderful neighborhoods, and it's just a delight. I have a nicer office there than I do in Johnson Hall. back at this. So thank you again very much for this honor. Thank you not just for this proclamation, but for your embracing of what it is that we're trying to do to educate our young people here in this state. We're deeply grateful to you. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to have a quick, after comments, we're going to have a quick picture handing you the proclamation.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. I didn't know that you were going to be here today, but I want you to know that I've been wearing duck colors before every football game so far this fall.
I think that's why we've won.
I don't want to do anything different, you know.
Thank you.
One of the things I love about football is that we get to cheer for our young people and for our academic institutions in a way that we don't often get to do in the rest of our lives. I can't yell nearly as loudly for the White Stag Building as I can for the football team. And I think it's important for us to celebrate and to have constructive outlets for our energies and for our passions. And so I also want to point out, I sit next to the band at Otson, and they are absolutely wonderful also, as are the cheerleaders. And the whole community in Eugene, I think, is a credit to our great state. And it's wonderful that we have this showcase. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Will the gentlelady yield for a second? When Commissioner Fritz, when you wax eloquent about football, you're of course referring to soccer.
Not anymore, sir. Not anymore. There is only one football in America.
Mr. President, we should also note that this is above and beyond our normal job duties. Commissioner Fritz has volunteered to actually lead a delegation to the national championship game, representing those of us on
excellent
council, and selflessly giving up of her time and herself to go to that game.
I'd like to welcome you, Dr. LaVieri, to the City Council chamber. I want you to know my daughter is a junior at University of Oregon. And I also this year have recognized the burdens of being a fan of a number one team. I mean, not only do I watch the Oregon games very closely, but now I have to watch Auburn, Alabama games, Ohio State games. So I realize it's a tremendous sacrifice and burden, but it's also an honor to be a U of O Duck fan.
And thank you for the tuition money.
Yes, I just mailed it.
All right, we'll do a quick picture with you and the council.
Thank you. This is
awesome. I should also tell you that we have lapel pins. In reciprocity for the mayor's gesture for giving me this Portland pin, I have arranged with the people of the city of Eugene, there are no sales taxes for anyone wearing this.
Yes, that's what I told him when I gave him our pin. No sales tax in Portland. Yeah. So you grab one. Everybody smile. Wow. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So few people look at me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The local
person. That's right. Oh, thank you. Thank you. You have a swag. This is great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
coat on, or are you done?
I'm done. I just want to see you put the pin on. It's burning my neck. Big Viking here, big Viking. All right, thank you all for your patience. It's good to celebrate good news. City Council will come to order. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Happy New Year. Can you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Adams.
Here. A quorum is present. We'll begin with hearing the communications. We have four people signed up. Can you please read the title for item number one?
I think we have one piece of business that needs to be done first.
Oh, what is that?
President of the Council.
Oh, is that on my list? Okay, so nominations for President of the Council.
I move that Commissioner Leonard be President of the Council for the next 6 months.
Second.
Any nominations at all? Any nominations? It's been moved and seconded that Randy Leonard become the president of the Portland City Council, and in the event that the mayor is not available, he will serve as acting mayor.
Reserving my objection.
Okay, objection noted. Any discussion of this matter? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Congratulations.
So the audience knows that's very ceremonial. We switch every 6 months. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. You did a good job. But there are a few things that are going to change around here for the next 6 months. Just to let you know that today. I'll have you issuing proclamations later this afternoon.
All right. Now, can you please read the item number one?
Request of Marshall Lewis to address council regarding tenant rights and housing.
Title for item number two.
Request of Charles McDonald to address council regarding tenant rights and housing.
All right. Can you please read the title for item number three?
Request of Lou Church to address council regarding tenant rights and housing.
Some of the tenant rights speakers weren't able to come since we were scheduled in December when the meeting got canceled, and I think the time got switched today. I'm not sure if that was specifically for the football boosterism thing, but
it's for swearing in.
Since my brother and I, Carl and I, both moved here to go to Reed College, which pretty much boycotts sports altogether, we appreciate U of O being in Portland. I especially appreciated the U of O president introducing Seymour Hersh in 2010, who talked about social justice, human rights, and the war in Afghanistan. I know that today's about football and sports so far, but there are other issues like transit, housing, and healthcare. Given the 3-minute time limit, I'll try to touch briefly and broadly on those. I'm Lou with Progressive Student Union from Portland State, Tenant Rights Project, Transit Riders Union. We were happy to argue when this was still being debated that the White Stag sign be changed to University of Oregon. There was an eventual settlement that was a different sign than that, but we opposed the conservative student body president of Portland State, Hannah Fisher, who was insistent that White Stag was part of PSU's territory. We think U of O is an excellent school like Reed College, and possibly U of O North, which has been discussed for decades, might even take over PSU at some point, perhaps. In terms of what prepared remarks I had, I basically want to talk about tenant rights and housing in terms of retaliatory evictions. Two of the tenants who are low income in downtown Portland, Candy, who was hoping to talk today, and Randy, who's talked with council in the past on behalf of the project, have both been targeted in 2010. For retaliatory eviction. The landlord, corporations involved, or entities involved, Housing Authority of Portland, Central City, Unconcerned, Pinnacle Management, which, like CCC, is kind of a subcontractor of HAP. Randy, unfortunately, was evicted, but is now a full-time student at PCC and living in the Clark Center. So some progress for him personally, but we were hoping he'd be able to keep his housing, which did not happen, with Central City unconcerned. Candy, on the other hand, successfully fought back against a retaliatory eviction and is working with Tenant Rights Project vis-a-vis Pinnacle, which is a subcontracted landlord under the Housing Authority of Portland. I wanted to thank Willamette Week on Transit for naming TriMet as Rogue of the Year. We think, as a longtime Transit Writers Union project, that's an excellent choice. We disagree with targeting ATU, the Drivers Union. We think supporting drivers, workers, and healthcare is important. Willamette Week seems to be becoming a neoliberal paper.
All right. I think, can you please read the title for communications item number 4?
Request of Hector Laura Cervantes to address council regarding illegal experiments in government and medical system. He had an emergency and had to leave, but left some written material.
Okay. In considering the consent agenda then, I'd like to continue, reschedule item number 11 to next week on the consent agenda. Could you please read that title?
Once it's pulled from consent, it'll remain on the regular agenda.
Great.
And item then, 11, you said to read it?
Please.
Sorry. Accept a grant in the amount of $2,445,563 from the Oregon Department of Transportation and authorize an intergovernmental agreement for the design of the Northeast 102nd Avenue, Northeast Gleason to Southeast Washington, Phase 2.
Unless objection, this item will be continued till next week. Can you also read the title, item number 35, which I'll be referring back to my office?
Allow consumption of alcohol in the public right-of-way, provided a permit to authorize a community event street closure is issued under Chapter 17.44.
Sorry, that was on regular agenda. All right, are there any other items that anyone wishes to pull from the consent agenda? All right, Carla, would you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have a 10:30 time certain. I don't believe it'll take the full 45 minutes, at least I'm hopeful. Can you please read the title for item number 5?
Amend private for hire transportation regulations code to add regulation of horse-drawn carriages.
Thank you, Mr. Lanham.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. I'm Thomas Lanham. I'm the Revenue Bureau Director. And with me is Kathleen Butler, our Regulatory Division Manager, as well as Mike Oswald, the Director of Animal Services for Multnomah County. In August of 2009, across the street from the Multnomah County Main Branch Library, a horse collapsed on a very hot day, and the mayor's office convened our bureau to take a look at regulating that industry, regulating horse-drawn industry in general. And at that time, Mike's office also investigated the cause of death of the horse, and of course, there was no determination as to the actual cause of death. The regulatory division convened a series of meetings in the summer of 2010, and we talked to numerous stakeholders, including representatives of the industry itself, veterinarians. We talked with animal services. We also had members of the Portland Police Bureau, Mounted Patrol, and other interested stakeholders, to include advocacy groups for animal rights. So the regulations before you today basically are common sense regulation of this industry. We came at this from a least impact perspective in terms of trying not to overly regulate or to cause a great deal of cost in terms of the industry. We reviewed regulations in a number of other cities, and in fact, dozens of other cities around the country, and lifted many of the pieces of our regulations from those other municipalities that have been doing this for some time. We also, the principal direction from the mayor's office at the time was to regulate the maximum temperature at which horse-drawn carriages could operate, and the number that we settled on was 90 degrees. That was seemed to be the basic consensus around many other cities, and as well as the industry experts that we discussed that requirement with. So those conversations that we had with stakeholders over the summer of 2010 were very robust, and we didn't always reach agreement, but we did come up with a better product as a result of those conversations. A number of changes were made to the ordinance, which has been posted for some time for comment. So I'm going to stop there and let Kathleen Butler walk you through the specifics of the ordinance, and then Mike Oswald may have some comments as well.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the time to hear about our proposal this morning. We've been working on it for a little bit over a year with many stakeholders and representatives of other agencies, and so we're really excited to be bringing it before you this morning. We didn't realize when we began that it would take quite this long. As Thomas mentioned, the first thing that we looked at was temperature, and we looked at many other cities. There were a few cities that had a lower temperature maximum than the 90, and there were a few that had a higher one, but the majority of them were right around the 90-degree mark. Interestingly enough, when we looked back, we did find a history of regulation here in Portland. For several years in the late 80s and early 90s, there was an ordinance that regulated the one company that was operating in Portland, and at that time, the temperature maximum was 90 degrees as well. So there was a lot of consistency in what we saw. One of the reasons for keeping that temperature so low is because of the radiation effect in a city environment. All the concrete tends to magnify that heat, especially in the afternoon. And so the actual temperature and the effect on the horses is often higher than what the ambient temperature is. We looked at the other cities who have horse-drawn carriages. Most cities that allow it do regulate it. And in addition to the temperature, they are pretty consistent in terms of what they regulate. There are time and place restrictions, so there is no operation during rush hour, for example. There are equipment standards for the carriages, and there are care standards for the horses, the most important one being a yearly veterinary check certifying that the animal is capable of performing this work without undue stress. We also put compliance with existing state slow-moving vehicle regulations, important liability insurance requirements, and all of these will be checked via a permitting process. We kept the permit cost as low as we possibly could. We put it on par with pedicabs. And all of the regulations from the first draft were reviewed in detail line by line through a series of stakeholder meetings with a very wide-ranging group, including a number of the horse-drawn carriage operators, Multnomah County Animal Services, the Humane Society, some interested citizens. So we really did tear it apart and put it back together again. We did make some changes as we were doing that. Some important ones were that we didn't require the inspection of the facility to occur every year, but that would just be on a periodic and as-needed basis. That was one of the reasons why we kept the cost quite low as well, because we understood that it would be a burden to these businesses who don't operate very frequently in Portland if they had a high cost to their permitting. One of the other things we eliminated was the requirement that the routes get approved, because the operators thought that that would be particularly burdensome and it would also be difficult to administer. We have received the benefit of many stakeholders who devoted their time to helping us get this right. I want to mention in particular Ramon Corona from PUBOT. He was the person who provided the one perk for the horse-drawn carriage operators. He found a place for them to park downtown. Jane Biquette also helped us with a lot of our research. Scott Beckstead from the Humane Society, who is going to speak with you, and also Mike, and Ina Levin from the mayor's office was also extremely helpful. So that's the end of my comments. I'm available for questions, and we do have a few folks who are going to speak to the ordinance, I think. Mike?
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. Mike Oswald, Director of Multnomah County Animal Services. We have been the service provider for the city for over 35 years when it comes to animal issues. I first wanted to thank Mayor Adams and Thomas and Kathleen for inviting us to be part of the stakeholder group to address this issue. It's critical for the city to establish regulations for the horse-drawn carriage industry here. The proposed code sets clear and enforceable standards and requirements designed to safeguard the health, safety, and welfare of carriage horses, at the same time the safety of the public. As you know, these are operations that are in the streets downtown, so safety for motorists, bicyclists, and pedestrians are also one of the concerns. I think, just to highlight a couple of standards that I think are really critical and make this a strong ordinance, it sets standards for the care of the carriage horses, including health certification and other animal care practices. And it does, as Kathleen and Thomas were saying, it sets real standards for time, place for safe operation, and prohibited locations and times of high temperature and other dangerous conditions. So it addresses all of those concerns that I think everybody in the community shares when it comes to the welfare of animals. The other thing, too, I think is important is that by establishing application, inspections, and permittings for stables, carriages, equipment, drivers, all of those things are going to help lead to the success of this program. So we were glad to be a part of it and look forward to working with the city in the future.
Thank you for your contribution. Questions?
Excuse me. What is the is it an annual permit fee?
Yes, it's $125 for the company. They have a $100 application fee during the initial year. That's in addition to that. And then the horse permit is $25, the carriage permit, and the driver permit is $25.
So the startup cost is about $200, and then it's $125 fee?
The startup cost, I think I have a few charts here. For one carriage and one driver, the startup cost would be about, sorry about that. I thought I had a total here, but we removed one of the fees. So company application and company permit is $225. The vehicle would be $25, and so that would be $250 for the initial company fee. And then each year thereafter, it would be $150.
And then who determines the official temperature by which these regulations
It's the National Weather Service temperature. That's the typical temperature that cities use.
Do you have more?
No.
Commissioner?
Thank you. Why did we do away with the previous regulations that you mentioned?
There was one single operator, and the ordinance that had previously been passed was directed only towards that one operator. And so when that operator went out of business, I think the ordinance just ceased to have any relevance. It was directed at that one company.
Okay, thank you. Why are there the restrictions on people with felony convictions for 10 years?
We modeled the restrictions, the disqualifying factors for the drivers on our private for hire code, where we regulate taxi drivers and town car drivers, et cetera. And so there's a whole series of disqualifying factors that require additional scrutiny. It's not that someone who had that could not get a permit, but they would have to make special application to us and explain what had happened, and then they might be able to be granted a permit.
And is that the case in these regulations?
Yes.
And what was the reason for having 10 years, regardless of whether the person was in prison for 10 years or had a felony conviction that didn't was of a lesser severity that they had in 7 years previously and then had a blameless record since then?
I believe that the 10 years was put into the private for hire code as a way of making sure you had a good history for the person, a good long history, so that it, if something had happened, you know, before that. The 10 years is basically for felony convictions only and violent crimes only.
Okay, so thank you. Do we have any sense of how is the training going to be provided? Is it city-approved training?
It'll be similar to what we do with the pedicabs. The companies have their own training programs, and we will just ask them to provide us with a description of that, and then we'll approve that. The companies themselves will do the training.
And do we have any notion of how we're going to do enforcement?
Well, we have. We'll accept complaints, and the police will be involved. We spoke with the trainer for the mounted police, and she's already aware of these operators and already giving some scrutiny to their operations. And also, the parking enforcement folks would be empowered. And basically, any city officer that recognizes a problem is empowered and here to take action and tell them to change what they're doing if there's a problem. So.
And essentially, it's like what we do in a number of different sections of the code. We specify what we think is the right thing to do, and most people want to do the right thing, and so they'll do it. And then it's complaint-driven. Is that what I'm hearing?
Exactly.
Okay. Then my last question, I'm just wondering, do police horses have the same limitations and regulations?
No. They operate under very different circumstances. Obviously, they're not a commercial operation, and they are operating to protect the public safety. Their horses can operate up to 100 degrees. But they have facilities downtown for resting, so and they're monitored in a very different way, and obviously not pulling a carriage. So.
Thank you.
Additional council discussion? Thank you. Thank you for your work, partnership. How many people have signed up?
We have 7 people.
Okay.
The first 3, please come on up, are John Vandenberg, Judith Reese, and Robin Cook.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. Your testimony and everyone else testifying today must adhere to the city codes regarding lobbying, which means that if you're authorized to speak on behalf of an organization, for-profit or nonprofit, you need to tell us that. Otherwise, you just, before you testify, otherwise you just need to give us your name, no address. So just name, no address, and that clock in front of you counts down your 3 minutes.
Can I hand you these statements first?
And anything to hand out, you give them to the council clerk. So, Mr. Vandenberg.
Thank you, Mayor. We're going to hope to have 2 of us use much less than 3 minutes so that the our main speaker could perhaps go over the 3 minutes, if permissible. I'm an attorney. I've been working downtown Portland for 21 years, and I'm here in support of the regulations. I submit that even if one were to view a horse as a mere machine, these regulations still are needed. First, they're needed to protect the city. If there should be an accident that injures property or person, the city will be the deep pocket here. These carriage operators are not deep pockets. They won't be the lead defendant in the case. And right now, the city doesn't require them to have liability insurance protecting the city. The city also is on notice that most other cities that allow carriage horse operators require regulations, and the city is also on notice of the many injuries, dozens of injuries and accidents that have occurred in horse carriage operations where they spook, et cetera. So therefore, just to protect the city's finances, these regulations make sense. Second and finally, I would look to Seattle. Example in Seattle. Seattle has regulations that are similar to these. They have a carriage operator business up there, and if one looks at the website for the carriage operator up there, they tout the fact that this is a regulated business, that their horses are treated pursuant to the regulations. And then finally, of course, a horse is not a mere machine. It's a living being, and one would hope that if these regulations are indeed passed, not again will a horse collapse and die on the streets of Portland, which incident was observed by our next speaker.
Thank you, sir. Hi, welcome.
My name's Judy Reese, and I Yeah. My name's Judy Reese, and I own a wedding cake business. And the evening of the 1st, I was downtown and had just finished delivering a wedding cake at the Art Museum outside, and was on 10th, and stopped at the stoplight at 10th and Taylor. And the carriage horse had come up to the light at Taylor, and so they were to my right. And I'm a longtime horse owner, grew up with horses. My sister's children both show horses, so I'm familiar with their behavior. The horse, it was hot, of course, it was over 100 degrees that day. And the horse was throwing his head about and exhibiting a fair amount of distress. The driver seemed to have trouble keeping the horse in the lane that it was supposed to be in, and she was constantly pulling him back and forth. So I noticed that he seemed to be undersized, and he was quite thin, and he looked old to me. So I was concerned, and when the light turned for me, I pulled ahead, but slowly, so that I could watch him make the corner. And I was in front of them, and he made the corner, and he proceeded about halfway down the block and collapsed and struggled to get up and then fell back down and then died. So I believe that if we had these regulations, he certainly wouldn't have died that day. And it's a shame.
Thank you very much for sharing the witness account. Hi.
Good morning. I'm Robin Cook. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I am a horse owner, and I'm also chairman of the board for Forward Stride, which is the largest nonprofit therapeutic riding facility in the Portland metropolitan area. I'm very much in favor of the regulations and would like to thank City Transportation for all their hard work on this. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. The invited testimony, I guess, was Scott Beckstead from the Oregon Humane Society, Mike Oswald, Multnomah County. Did we already hear from Mike?
Yeah.
Sorry. And then Dan Anderson from the Bureau of Transportation. Then we'll go back to the list. Hi, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Mayor Adams, commissioners, my name is Scott Beckstead. I'm the Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I also have the title in that organization as an equine protection specialist. I'm a lifelong horse person, born and raised with horses in southern Idaho. The first thing that I was hired to do by the Humane Society was establish the Duchess Sanctuary, which is an 1,120-acre horse sanctuary down in Douglas County. Over half of the resident horses that live there are heavy draft type horses that are commonly used in the carriage industry. I also served for 5 years as the mayor of Waldport down in Lincoln County, so I want to extend my appreciation to you for the good work that I know you're doing. The Humane Society of the United States is the nation's largest animal welfare organization. We have just over 150,000 members here in Oregon, most of whom live in the greater metropolitan and Portland area. I received a number of calls in August of 2009 about a horse that had died here in Portland. The conditions that were described to me was that it was extremely hot that day, that the horse was a smaller horse pulling a very large carriage, that the horse was elderly in his 20s, which would put him basically on par with a 60 to 70-year-old man, and that he was in a state of extreme distress prior to his collapse and death. Most of the calls that I received from our constituents and members were calling for a ban on horse-drawn carriages in Portland. Nevertheless, I'm here today to express our strong support for the regulations that are being proposed. When we received, Mayor, your written desire for regulations that balanced the needs of the animals as well as public safety and the needs of the businesses, I think that all of the stakeholders sat down, resolved to try and achieve exactly that. In my view, these proposed regulations represent a very modest and very balanced approach that carefully address the important issues of public safety, the viability of the businesses, as well as the health, safety, and well-being of the horses themselves. It's important, as city staff has already noted, that you know, a lot of other cities that have what are widely viewed as reasonable regulations served as the model for what is before you today. And we believe that had these regulations been in effect in August of 2009, that horse might still be alive today. The regulations are a result of a series of meetings where a wide variety of different viewpoints were brought to bear. The dialogue was respectful, but it was at times vigorous, and I think that what we came up with is absolutely the best approach for Oregon, and certainly a very important step toward making sure that the public is safe, the horses are well cared for, and these carriage owners can continue to operate. There were multiple changes made, as has already been mentioned, to the regulations to address the concerns of the businesses. And we wanted to make sure that we addressed not just the carriage owners that were in operation now, but prospective business owners who may want to establish this sort of business here in Portland. And it was widely agreed, I think, that most, if not all, of the carriage owners that are operating do a good job and understand their animals and understand their business. Nevertheless, again, at least one animal's life might have been spared had these regulations been in effect. I'd like to close by commending your city staff. They did a great job. They sat in a room where they had to balance a lot of competing viewpoints, and they did an outstanding job, and they did a really, really great job of communicating clearly and effectively with everyone about the meetings, about what was going to be discussed, and about the regulations themselves. So the position of the Humane Society of the United States is that the city should adopt these proposed regulations, this ordinance, and thereby protect public safety and, of course, the horses that are put to work in this industry. Thank you very much.
Question?
Yeah.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your services, Mayor of Waltport.
You bet.
So what would you advise us to say to people who write in or testify saying that we should ban it altogether? Why not do that?
Well, I think the welfare of the animals can be protected while maintaining the economic viability of the industry. Portland is a little bit unique in that in a lot of other cities, you have businesses that are owned and operated right there in the downtown area, and the horses live there. The horses live downtown. In Portland, it's a situation where these businesses come in from out of town, sometimes from out of the county. And so they're not subjecting their animals to the sort of intensive day in, day out, hours long regimens of labor that horses in other cities have to endure. And so the Humane Society of the United States is not opposed to horses pulling carriages, but we believe that the welfare of the horses must be paramount, obviously, because they're not really asked whether they want to do this work or not. They're made to, and since they're made to, we at least owe it to them to mind their welfare and their well-being. So we believe that a balance is possible, and that's why I guess that is the response that I would recommend.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Mr. Anderson, thank you for your testimony, sir.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Dan Anderson, and I was Mayor Adams' public advocate in transportation on August 1st, 2009, when the horse named Balator died on a public street in front of the Central Library. He was pulling newlyweds in a carriage, and it was a hot day. News of the horse's death traveled fast and was reported heavily in the media. Of the hundreds of people from across the country who contacted me, it was the handful of Portlanders who saw Balator that day that affected me most. These witnesses not only reported that the experience was disturbing, but asked whether it was in any way preventable. In attempting to answer the question, it became clear that there were not existing city rules that would have kept the horse from working that day. So the mayor and his staff met with representatives from animal rights groups, horse carriage operators and owners, and various government agencies charged with protecting animals and regulating businesses to find a reasonable solution. The conclusion that came from these discussions was that in order for private horses to be protected in the city of Portland, their operations should be regulated by common sense rules that do not put horses at undue risk or horse operators out of business. I believe that the proposal today meets these criteria and places a fair amount of responsibility on horse owners who choose to put their animals to work on the city of Portland streets. Thanks for your time.
Thank you all very much. Carla, do we have more?
The next three are Teresa Ritchie, Ronald Carr, and James Rumgay. And they'll be followed by the last two, Robin Corrigan and Jane Bequette.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Should we call up the third?
Yeah. Who's the next?
My name apparently ended up on the wrong list.
Okay. So your name was?
James Rumgay.
Sorry. What was your name?
Ronald Carr.
Okay. So we'll take put you on the right list.
Robin Corrigan, want to come on up?
Anybody else? Okay, please begin.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Teresa Ritchie, and I own and operate Specialty Carriage Company, which is a carriage business that works downtown Portland and has for coming up on 12 years. Successfully, may I add, no mishaps. And I've been in business as well for 22 years. Most of the animals that I own and operate are born into my arms, so I've known them all their life and pretty much know more than anybody else would about them. It was quite a sorry passing when Balitar died, although I think, as anybody else would agree, he was doing something that he loved to do very much, and our horses all do love their jobs. If I've invited anybody at any time to come and meet the horses that work down here. We have quite a following when we are down here. There's a lot of a fan club, I might say, for especially one horse that I work down here the most. And, excuse me, we would not put these horses in harm's way ever. They take care of us as well as we take care of them. I know that there's been a lot of mixed emotion, controversy as far as opinion. And I would just like to say that if some of the people that really are against this would come out and really open their eyes to what goes into these animals and the amount of time and care and training, that it may change their opinion. I've changed quite a few opinions downtown Portland of people coming up and asking me. We're always open to questions or suggestions, and we love for people to know what really goes on so they don't think that this is, you know, a mean thing to do. These animals need a purpose, and it does allow them to have quite an upper-class existence because they provide for themselves as well as us. So, yeah, we're going to take real good care of them. As far as the regulations go, I am not opposed to the regulations. In the beginning, I did have a problem with the fact that the fees were not so much on paper of what the startup fee would be. But when you add into that the vet check and the extra things you had to do to your carriages, there was a whole lot of extra things that came into place. All of the carriage owners that I know, which is most of them, have always carried liability insurance. That has never been a problem, and you can check us at any time. Unfortunately, all of them couldn't be here for this today because some of them were not notified that this was going on. I think that part of the confusion with the amount of work these horses do down here is that in the other cities that have been contacted or checked, they do allow a taxi service. And so they also, therefore, allow a place for these horses to be stabled, a place for them to get water, rest, shelter, and so on. We don't do taxi services down here. None of us do. We are by reservation only. We come in for, say, a wedding. We wait for the people to come out in the safest place we can find. We take them for a ride. Usually we stop and have pictures. The horse isn't just flying through town for a solid hour. There's really no reason to require a 10-minute rest at the end of each hour that they work. They don't work that hard down here. Nobody's running through town.
So I gave you a little extra time, but your time is up. Would you like to one last summary statement?
I would like to finish this. Hopefully that we can all make this happen and continue to work down here. As I said, this would not be a very opportune time for anyone to put a small business out of town.
And I don't want to do that either, but I do need you to sum it up. I can't. It looks like you've got a couple of pages there.
Well, I've got a lot of pages. But okay.
So we really appreciate your testimony. Is there any final point you'd like to leave us with? You're almost a minute and a half over.
I would like to leave you with this, is that I do know my horses better than anybody, including any vet that could come out and see them for 15 minutes to give them a health certificate. I realize you guys have to cover yourselves as well, but Ballatar had a health certificate the very week that he died, and it was apparently of a healthy horse. So I have a little bit of a problem of, and the vets do as well, giving you a health certificate that lasts for a year. That really isn't something that is feasible. You can get a health certificate, yes, but it's only good for usually 30 days to cross the state lines.
Okay. My understanding was from staff that was a compromise to recognize the economics of having to get more frequent health certificates. So that was my understanding, that it was a step in the right direction, even if it wasn't entirely conclusive or valid for an entire year. So thank you very much for your participation in this. You've helped make it a better piece of legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. James Rumgay, owner of Ingleside Farm, established in 1911, owner and breeder of Black Clydesdale horses.
You get closer to the mic, please, sir.
Pardon me.
That's okay.
I've driven single horses through a 40-horse hitch in Baraboo, Wisconsin. Driving has been my life. I've been in it 42 years. I'm here to voice my opinion on the regulations that I have read on the 13 pages of documents. I find that things are very redundant. There's many overlapping rules. Things, in my opinion, could be a lot safer. I have been involved in the city of Portland. I was the one who brought a team into Portland for the Starlight Parade to prove that horses could be safely in the Starlight Parade. I've hauled movie stars to the theaters. I quit in 1982. I got tired of going away from home. I have not taken my horses away from home since then. I'm just actually appalled by the amount of regulations and the stringency of what they are. Yes, we need regulations, but I think they should probably be put into a little bit better English and a little bit more correct for the situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We all respectfully have to work with our lawyers. Hi. Sorry, Ben. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Robin Corrigan, and I'm speaking for the nonprofit group Friends of Lads Edition Gardens. I have been on the board of Friends of Lads Edition Gardens for over 18 years. FLAG is a neighborhood nonprofit whose mission is to strengthen community ties, and we also work with the city to maintain and enhance the historic rose gardens in Lads Edition, which we get more and more involved every year as there's less and less money for parks to do this. Just want you to know that. Okay. In support of its mission, FLAG has hosted an annual holiday event the first weekend in December for the last 15 years. And the highlight of this event is a horse-drawn wagon ride through the neighborhood. Neighbors sing carols and look at all the Christmas lights as we circle the neighborhood in a horse-drawn wagon. This is the single most popular event hosted by FLAG. We routinely book our carriage vendor as soon as possible, generally almost a year in advance, because there are so many competing holiday events. I believe we use the same vendor that Peacock Lane has used in the past, and there's also some other events in other Portland neighborhoods that use this same vendor. Number of vendors providing the service is very, very small, and the one we use is the only one in the area. They're based down in towards Salem, I think, who has a big enough wagon to do this kind of hayride. This isn't one of those little, you know, like hauling people for a wedding. This is a big wagon. And they use draft horses. The first, we've used three vendors in the past 15 years. The first two are no longer in business, and the third informed us less than a month ago that this is the last year she would work with Flag or work in the city of Portland. She cited these regulations as a single reason why she would no longer be able to work with us. She did not say, however, she was going out of business. She has plenty of other commitments, but she would stop doing business in the city of Portland. So in light of this discussion of regulations, we on our board and in our neighborhood want to let you know that there will be fallout, and the fallout for Flag could spell the end of a cherished and much-loved neighborhood event. And as a city that encourages strong neighborhoods and neighborhood involvement, we wanted you to know that.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Thank you all.
Question, how many horses pull the hayride?
Two. And they're big, you know, the huge, massive, these guys would know what they are, you know, Clydesdales or Percherons or something there.
So it actually wouldn't be very much money to pay the permit fees.
I don't know how much money is relevant, you know. They don't make a lot of money doing this.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The last person who signed up is Jane Bequette.
Hi, thanks for waiting.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for squeezing me in here. I'm Jane Bequette. I'm an interested citizen. I live in Laurelhurst, and I have full board care for my horse in Sherwood, and I'm out there commuting to be with him at least four times a week. I adopted him 13 years ago, and he's going on 16 now. I love horses. I added my voice to the call for a ban on horse carriages when Bellator died. And I would like to state, to quote Holly Cheever, a veterinarian that was consulted on a horse carriage issue for another city, that to state unequivocally that I don't believe that horse-drawn carriages and motor vehicles should share the same roadways. There's no way that cities in their exhaust fumes, hard road services, and busy traffic patterns can provide humane as opposed to merely survivable environment for carriage horses. But these regulations are the minimum needed to put forth to protect horses with carriages in our city. Bellator's death was caused in part, at least because of the absence of regulations. And I do appreciate that Nick Fish mentioned standing up for the most vulnerable, as certainly this would include animals in our city, and especially the carriage horses. I was invited to attend the meetings with the carriage operators during the process reviewing these regulations. Several operators said they'd cancel in hot weather unless the client was a bride. This is one important example of why the regulations are needed. The customer in a business is always right, and the customer in the horse carriage business is the bride or the person, not the horse. Therefore, the city needs to step in to protect the horses from the overdriving interests of the business mindset. Although incidents and accidents may be few, the mindset and the attitude that are the root of the accidents is very present and prevails. On October 7th of 2009, I presented to this city council, to each of you, input on why horse carriages in our city is a public safety concern, and I stand by my comments and submissions from from October of 2009. And I just want to say, in light of the later discussions, that these regulations are meant to protect us from the least responsible, not to drive out responsible horse operators. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Additional questions or discussions from council? This is a non-emergency. And otherwise, we'll move to a second reading.
One question.
Yep. Go ahead and ask it. We'll figure out who to bring it.
Okay. I guess the veterinarian certificate and its duration, there was some testimony that, I mean, I'm reading the regulations, and I don't see that it says the certificate needs to be a year. Am I missing that? I mean, there was testimony that no vet would issue a certification for more than 30 days.
What we've required is somewhat less stringent than some other cities who do require more frequent examinations. But again, it was that trying to keep the cost down. So the certification is required yearly within 30 days of when they apply for their permit.
But the certification can be only for 30 or 60 days, and that's okay?
I'm not sure what the standards are for, you know, I think there are probably different standards for certification in terms of how long they last.
Well, what is our
intent? The way I'd understand it, the way I'd describe it is we want the horses to have a health check once a year.
That's correct.
It's not, so if we're using the wrong words, that's the legislative intent.
So this was one of the compromises that we came up with when we talked with the owners that said that would be an onerous requirement.